Welcome to Reconstructed Faith, a podcast where we talk about truth you can build your life on. We hope to dive into the hard conversations of life and faith and seek out reasonable, substantive answers. My name is Colson Lechner, and I'm joined by Chris Legg and Bryn Starnes. This is Reconstructed Faith. Well, hey there. Before we jump into this episode, let me do a quick background kind of bio of the people who we interviewed to give you a little taste and a teaser of the content that you're about to listen to. Chris and I got to sit down with Shanti and Jeff Felden, and they are best-selling authors, popular speakers, and internationally renowned social researchers. Nearly 20 years ago, this average couple stumbled over some things they just didn't, quote, get about each other. They have been using their analytical backgrounds to help other semi-confused couples decode each other ever since. So both with graduate degrees from Harvard, Shanti and Jeff are the authors and co-authors of many groundbreaking books, such as For Women Only, For Men Only, The Kindness Challenge, and Secrets of Sex and Marriage. Their eye-opening findings are regularly featured in media ranging from The Today Show and The New York Times to Family Life and Focus on the Family. As the primary researcher, Shanti is always in the middle of her next research project or writing her next book, where she applies her analytical skills to investigate eye-opening, life-changing truths about relationships, both at home and in the workplace. An attorney, entrepreneur Jeff, is always in the middle of his next technology company startup. The Feldens and their two children live in Atlanta, Georgia, and the Feldens actually also wrote the foreword to Chris's book, Sex and Marriage. And so I hope you enjoy this conversation with Shanti and Jeff Felden. Here we go. Well, welcome back to the Reconstructed Faith podcast. My name is Colson Lechner, accompanied by my partner in crime, Chris Legg. And Chris, we've got some very special guests today on the podcast.
We do.
So I'm going to throw it over to you, and then you can get our conversation rolling.
Well, for our listeners, we probably ought to say it isn't Bryn and her baby. Let me introduce our guests here. The Feldens are kind of superheroes to me. Very much so. Like, I'm not a celebrity guy who gets freaked out about celebrities, but now both times of getting to interact with you guys, I got kind of nervous, and because to me, y'all are kind of you're world changers. Like, I would vote.
Hilarious, Chris.
Keep going. I'm enjoying this.
That's a great way to start out a Monday.
Exactly. I was going to do the What About Bob line about, you know, Mother Teresa of Calcutta, you know, and anyway, maybe, and then the Feldens. So this is like their research, the research you guys did in regards to marriage, especially in the conversation of Christian marriages, totally changed, in my opinion, the narrative. It changed the paradigms, and which desperately needed to be changed. And through nothing short of divine providence, I got the chance to talk with them a couple of years ago before Mark and I did the book. And so they wrote the foreword, and then they've been generous with their time. They let me come on their podcast, and now they've been willing to come on ours. And it's just an incredibly unfair trade in our advantage. And so we're so appreciative of it. So here's what I wanted to do. I wanted the opportunity. I know also that some of y'all's up and coming research is connected to some of these conversations about mental health and the church and that kind of stuff. Yes. And so one, I want to make sure we get that in there. That being said, I'd love to hear kind of a little bit, tell everybody what y'all are working on and what's coming out and what they need to be looking for and where they go to find all of this, material. And then we'll dive in. So I want to hear from you guys first, as far as that kind of stuff.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, why don't you start?
All right. So the project that we have coming out shortly, which I am super thrilled about, it's actually a two-part project on mental health, and in specific, mental health in the church, because it's such a big topic. We actually are approaching it from two different perspectives. You could call it kind of top-down and bottom-up. And the top-down is essentially a research project of a giant research study and survey of more than 2,000 pastors.
Wow.
From all streams of the church, all over the country, all different ethnicities, all different sizes of churches. Just we got it as broad as we possibly could in order to put together what are the perspectives of the church leaders around mental health. And in particular, how can the church actually become a key solution to the mental health crisis?
Wow.
because right now we have, and we can get into this conversation if you'd like, but right now we have this incredible issue today where there are so many people who are anxious and so many people who are dealing with issues. And some of these issues are just life pain. You know, you have prior trauma and you're just trying to deal with it. And the church hasn't necessarily known exactly how to deal with some of that. And so how could it look for the church to be prepared to deal with that? And so wow, that's what this whole book is about. And so that's coming out in September. We're completely excited about this, September of 2025.
Oh, wow.
And then the bottom up version is our own mental health, taking responsibility for what we can do. And
which is critical because the supply of licensed therapists, counselors, isn't sufficient to meet the demand right now.
I'm doing what I can, but we can only get so many trained.
Yeah. If someone says, you know, just hold it together for the next 6 months until you can get an appointment, that doesn't feel particularly satisfying to the person who needs help.
Yeah. And so what we have been doing for the last 2 years, basically, and what the book is currently or right in the middle of it, is the bottom up project is, if all of our books and all of our projects are what are the little things that make a big difference, this is what are the little things that make a big difference in your mental health, mm-hmm, and your emotional health, mm-hmm, and your spiritual health. Like, what is it that you can do that are little things that'll help you thrive? And so for the last 2 years, we've been doing this unbelievably interesting research.
Super fascinating.
So mm-hmm, fascinating, with all these people, hundreds of people who either have gone through really significant, you know, sometimes mental health issues or really significant life journeys. Maybe they're even still in the light. Maybe they're still in the valley, but they're joyful. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how? And so, you know how the Apostle Paul says, I've learned the secrets of being content.
Right.
No matter what. Yep. And it's like, okay, dude, what are the secrets? That's what we're trying to figure out in this project. And so that's going to be the next book, which is still, you know, a year and a half away. But we're in the middle of like creating the survey and all that kind of stuff right now.
So what we've found, like, to go along with Paul is, look, you got food and clothing. Be satisfied. Be content. You know, so
yeah,
we need a little more
than that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. Even if they're hitting you with sticks right now, you should be okay with it, right? That is the that's a powerful passage from Philippians 4 when he's really unpacking how badly he's been treated. I don't know if you guys have read N.T. Wright's biography of Paul. I used to think of Paul as, let me recommend it. So I used to think of Paul as a guy I wouldn't want to have coffee with because he always had the right answer. We always got the Paul answer. It just struck me as a Pharisee still, just who was a Christian. And I mean, as a brother, but that didn't mean I would enjoy him. Reading N.T. Wright's really playing out the broken man that this was, that he really was, and the level of rejection that he experienced. Even N.T. Wright's opinion, by the way, is that when he comes back to Jerusalem with the money he's gathered from all over the world, that the Jerusalem leadership rejects it. That's his opinion. And when he unpacks that, I was like, I'm not okay. Like, that's just not cool. And now I don't know if that's true. And he said, I don't know if it's true either, but that was his opinion. And so I just, the level of that, all of a sudden through N.T. Wright's biography, not that I'm here to push his book, but it is, Paul became a real person to me as he never had. Yeah. And then all of a sudden passages like this, when he says, I've learned to be okay, you know, even when I'm starving or when I have a lot, I've learned to be okay.
Absolutely.
And that's a big deal. So that sounds really cool. I've got clients and friends who I will, be pre-ordering that book for, that's really wild. So I'm glad y'all are doing that.
It has been a really, really important project for us in a lot of ways.
Yes.
I mean, all these projects are, like, all the studies that we've done on marriage and parenting and the workplace and all these different things, they're all important in their own ways. But this one in particular, you know, because it is very easy in today's culture and with some of the cultural dynamics to, for example, get anxious or depressed and to, there are things that, you know, we've had to deal with in our family and medical issues that are just hard.
Right.
And it's like, wow, talking to some of these people and seeing, okay, oh my goodness, I have seen, like, we've talked to these 20 people and 12 times I've heard this pattern. I think there's something here. And it's little and it's simple and it's like, I can do that tomorrow, thanks. And so right. That's the kind of stuff we're trying to identify for the survey.
One of the things that I'm really excited about for this is the idea that our surveys are always nationally representative. They're not just, you know, the evangelical church.
Right.
That's not what we're doing. We're looking at, you know, the general demographics around the nation. And I am convinced from talking to so many of these people that there is a difference in how successful you are in your approaches to your mental health challenges.
For sure.
Based on your faith.
Oh, for
and,
sure.
I mean, there was one individual, and all the interviews are confidential, but there was one individual who had experienced such trauma and disappointment and discouragement, and yet she radiated a sense of joy that was, when Shanti and I walked out of the interview, I said, I'll bet you a mental health professional, a secular mental health professional would look at this person and go, she's got mental health issues. Mm. She's clearly in denial
she's delusional.
Of how she should be feeling.
How she should be feeling.
So there's clearly, we've got to really help this person.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
She's too joyful.
But that, and it's ironic, actually, that was our very first research site. Okay, so we do all sorts of different interviews, random people, like whoever we're sitting next to on the plane.
Right.
Who I feel bad for, because, you know, it's really good data, because, you know, it's completely anonymous. They can be honest. But that was our first research site, which is where we go in. It's complicated, but where we go in and somebody arranges research interviews for us with people that they know that they have identified as being particularly healthy.
Right.
Like, even if they're going through issues.
Right.
Even in that case, there was actually a woman with really significant mental illness who was part of the sample, but she's handling it well. Like, she's a joyful person. And so we spent, you know, 2 days doing all these interviews, and it has been fascinating to see that same sense of what a secular professional would call delusion.
Right.
Yeah.
Replicated over and over and over and over in all these other research sites that we've been to since then.
What we want to understand through all of this is why.
Why?
And
why?
How?
Yeah, yeah. What do we need to be training and equipping? Right. And it's I think it's becoming more, not less, of an issue. It seems to be, at least, that we're raising kids who are not necessarily well-equipped, who aren't very resilient, who aren't knowing what to do with the weights and barriers and challenges that are common to mankind, but they seem to be feeling them in a way that, again, maybe there was an unhealthy suppression in the past, but now the problem is when we identify with our issues and challenges more than with what Christ has done in us, it's crippling to us. Something has to identify us.
You actually are raising, this is one of the habits.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things we found. And, you know, we haven't done the survey yet.
So we haven't tested it.
I don't know what the numbers are going to come out as, but that's actually one of the things that we've seen as a really common pattern is that it is very easy subconsciously to let these troubles become a part of our kind of our identity and
who
we think of ourselves as.
Yep.
And that can be, there's some ways that can actually, you know, we can be helped in certain sort of formats, but when it becomes a part of who we see ourselves as, that's an issue. And I'll give you just an example of this that isn't related to teenagers, but it's related to me. Like, we found out 4 years ago that I had breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And it was a punch in the gut for me and for Jeff and for our family. And thankfully it was early stage. They caught it early, but it was really disruptive. And it is still really disruptive. I have to take a therapy medicine every day that completely messes with my system. It's like, you know, all the things. However, one of the pieces of advice that I got so early on, and I am so grateful, and I've now heard it in some of these interviews as well, is I had a woman who came up to me because I do a lot of women's events and speak at like women's retreats.
Right.
And one woman came up to me. I had said something about finding joy no matter what. And I said, look, I'm not being crazy about this. Like, I just found out that I have breast cancer and I'm going through all the treatments. And, you know, I had two or three women who came up and said, oh, I'm a survivor. And, you know, that mine was 6 years ago. And, you know, you go, girl, which is encouraging, right? Like, that's helpful. It's nice to have a sense of sisterhood. And, you know, you can get through this and it's a pain, but you can do it. But then I had a woman come up to me who was probably just a few years older than me. She was roughly the same age. And she put her hand on my shoulders and she said, I had breast cancer too. And she said, I'm going to tell you one thing, since you're on the early stages of this journey. Your identity is not as a breast cancer survivor.
Right.
Your identity is as a child of a king.
Right. Yeah.
And she said, do not become someone who defines themselves by being a breast cancer survivor. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with the encouragement and the sisterhood and the help and all of that. But that is not who you are. And she said, I have seen so many women who get sucked in to being defined
right.
by this.
That's the difference between so described and defined.
Exact, mm. described and defined. Great way of putting it. We might have to use that in the book.
Right. It is a great.
So anyway, about, yeah, that's just about, an example.
Yeah, well, that applies to so many. And I mean, it applies to mental health, but also applies even to addictions. Like I can be described as a sugar addict or a porn addict or a meth addict or a, but I'm not defined by that. I can be described as the victim of sexual assault or abuse or whatever, racism. But I'm not defined by that. And that's a vital, it seems like a small change in a word, but it is a huge difference between one and the other. And that's, I think you're described that that's really powerful with what people do. They begin to define, even in our, in this area where we talk, people begin to define themselves. They start the conversation with, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a this, I'm a that. And I'm like, does that, so that's it. Like you're done. You're defined by this. Or are you just described by that? Are you, you say you're on a path, but then you said that as if that sounds like a definer, not a descriptor, and not something that could change.
And it sounds like it ends your path, kind of.
Right.
Now, and nobody would ever want to do that, right? Like, no one would ever think of themselves as doing that. But one of the things we've seen in the research, and this is, by the way, this is all the research has been done over the last 40 or 50 years in psychology and neuroscience and all the things, it has found that really it's biblically captured as a man thinks in his heart, so is he, right? And I mean, like I can show you some of the neuroscience that actually captures that exact same thing. And so it's just important for us to be aware of the trap, basically.
Right. That's exactly
right. So we don't
right.
just step into it without realizing that's what we're doing.
Okay, so given this conversation, I would love to hear y'all's thoughts on, and I know you don't have research for this, this is all anecdotal, but you're in this world a lot. One of the things we've heard over and over again is that the effects of someone's parents' marriage is a huge determiner on how they see the faith, how they see the church. Theologically, that's not surprising. The Apostle Paul definitely makes in Ephesians 5 a very close linkage between how we see marriage and how we see the church. And so if you grew up seeing a terrible marriage with your parents, then I guess it makes sense that you would then also intuit a terrible relationship with Christ. But I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts because this is an area where you guys, I know you, like I said, you don't have research for this, but you live in this world. Is this a pattern that you think exists, that you would see people who deconstruct, walk away from their faith? Are their parents' marriage a part of that? Do they run into that? What have you seen that?
Well, I'll tell you, it goes further back than that. So
okay.
let's just talk about some of the other research that's been done over, again, 40, 50, 60 years.
Okay.
So for many, many years, it has been known that there are these generational patterns.
Right. Yeah, the fourth turning type stuff.
Yeah, like just the whole thing, I mean, like literally, you know, in the last 20 years, people have been doing genograms, mm-hmm. you know, to try to trace like, what are the patterns from my parents and then their parents and then their parents? And, you know, what are the different things? And you see these patterns of things like, for example, maybe alcohol and drug addiction,
mm-hmm.
right? Maybe infidelity, maybe suicidality. And one of those patterns that also comes to the fore are things like marriage issues.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
And one of the things that come from all of the above is if you have a difficult marriage pattern and you have a pattern in your past of marriages breaking up, there, and this is a well-known thing. Sometimes it's hard for people to hear, but you are also less likely to be a churchgoer.
Sure.
Okay. That's just a statistic. It's just, you know, if you are a churchgoer and if you try to make your faith part of your life, you try to attend church regularly, it's very protective of marriage.
Yeah.
And so what's probably happening isn't just that a marriage is difficult and so somebody deconstructs. It's probably that there were also issues with your relationship with the Lord, with the parents and the parents before that and the parents before that, and maybe not actually being quite as committed to a regular faith experience and what can I do that's healthy. And so it probably isn't just a bad marriage that your parents had,
right?
And that you're more likely to deconstruct. And so it's both and they work together. And so for us, that's one of the reasons we are passionate about marriage work.
Yeah.
Is because as you are sort of, as you're investing in your marriage and hopefully investing in your faith, both of those things work together to be protective for your children. Both
that makes good sense. Yeah.
It's not one or the other. They're both inextricably intertwined. I'll give you, I do have one piece of data, for example, on this. We did, it's been a few years now, 10, 15 years. We did a bunch of research projects on teenagers. We did three big nationally representative surveys of teenagers for different books. One of them was called For Parents Only, and it was about getting inside the head of your kid.
Okay.
And so one of the things that we found that just blew my mind, and it was so encouraging, was we asked these teenagers who were, they were very honest. They are very honest about all sorts of things that parents probably don't really, you know, want to believe.
And they were honest because they were anonymous.
They were anonymous. Right.
Their parents weren't looking at their response.
There you go.
Yes, this was all, these are all nationally representative surveys of these anonymous teenagers. Anyway, but one of the things that we tried to get a handle on was, and it was one way to get a handle on kind of rebelliousness and like, what are they actually doing? And so we asked, if there was something that you knew your parents would disapprove of, but you really wanted to do it, would you do it anyway, or would you stop yourself?
Right.
And so we saw it was like 70% of the teenage population said, no, I'm kind of going to do it anyway.
Right.
and they kind of justified it by like saying, I would hope they would think I wasn't being too bad.
Right. Of course.
But I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. But in the group of kids that went to private Protestant Christian schools, now this was as close as we could get to a statistic, a demographic of, is this faith part of the family's life?
Yeah, integrated. Like, there you
because
go.
Going to church, all these other things, there's things that, you know, work and don't work. And so this was as close as we could get to, is the, it does the family have a real strong commitment to their faith? It doesn't mean that you have to go to a private Protestant Christian school.
Right.
We were just trying to find enough kids that we could use this as an analytic demographic. And so of the kids who went to private Protestant Christian schools, the number was exactly reversed.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
30% would do the thing that their parents didn't want them to do. And 70% said they would stop themselves.
That's really interesting.
And I thought that was so helpful as a, and also is a really important thing when you're talking to parents, not just about their marriage, but about their faith and mm-hmm. reconstructing and all these things is like the stuff that you want for your children.
Yeah.
They will see that in your commitment to your faith.
I think it is a wild one of the, this pattern that we've seen of, especially the ones who grew up. Now, I know ours is not representative. It's only a handful of people, and they've all been people who've deconstructed. So, of course, that or nearly did. But that pattern of their parents' faith being authentic, like that, yes. they may be hard line on the outside, but unkind to each other at home. Those mm-hmm. are our ones who seem to, because they have a faith to start with as children that they then walk away from, mm-hmm. and. Yeah. Or they're seeing the health.
Or they're met with, hey, I actually have legitimate questions about what we believe.
Yeah.
The ones who tend to fall away, at least just from our few mm-hmm. conversations, has been they were not met with like a matched curiosity of like, okay, let's look into this. This is not wrong for you to ask these questions. It was very much like, why are you asking questions?
Yeah, how dare you?
How like
you're not? You can't be a part of us if you ask those type of questions, right?
And it was like it was interesting and very sad to see like then what that happened, you know, in early life,
yep.
kind of childhood, adolescence. Then you kind of have, you know, you extrapolate that later on in life, yep. and it's like just they're having to absolutely. Consistently yep. unpack that same thing.
We saw the same thing in our data,
yeah.
exactly the same.
This pay like no you attention.
Your kids have to be able to ask the questions.
Yes. The pay no attention to the man behind the curtain version of Christianity is just a fail.
Yeah.
And I'm even wondering that this is a separate we might touch on this because who would have thought that here in 2025, what we would be discussing is not the theology of most of our churches, but the health of our churches. That's what seems to be delineating our churches now is not whether they're theologically sound, although because it's like that division has kind of happened. If I feel like, and maybe we're kind of post that question. Some churches are teaching scripture as authoritative and just some aren't. And that's kind of settled now. But the problem is neither one seem to have an anchor on the concept of being healthy, that healthy within their staff, healthy within their leadership, healthy within the church, healthy in dealing with crises and traumas. And that's just, you know, maybe that was just a given or it was a given that they weren't going to be, or no one was, I don't know what's changed. But like seeing the you know women leaving the church faster than men for the first time in all of American history is mind-boggling. Is that because we failed at health and women no longer feel obligated to go where they don't feel healthy? Yeah, jump in there.
Okay, I have a perspective, and I'm curious what you. I know you have a perspective on this as well, which I want to hear.
Start?
I will give you a different perspective, Chris.
Yeah.
That. We always share with people when they're worried about the state of the health of the church.
Right.
Because Jeff and I, we've done hundreds of events recently. In recent years, during all the issues, mm-hmm. hundreds of events at hundreds of churches. And by definition, we're probably going to the churches that have more of a healthy perspective because right. they want to
otherwise
do a marriage
they
event.
You.
They
want,
right. They want to do a, well, it's not just about us. They want to do a marriage event and invite
to
the community.
Their,
right.
Yeah.
They,
community.
Or they want us to speak on Sunday morning as, you know, because we're a married couple and we're going to talk about marriage or whatever. Right. Like, and they know that we are, you know, we're relatively conservative theologically. And so they're like, okay, so these are more likely to be the Bible is inerrant kind of churches because, mm-hmm. you know, they know that we're not going to say something opposite that. But I will tell you, these hundreds of churches, most of them are healthy. Now they're filled with imperfect people.
Yeah.
And they're led by imperfect people. Yeah. But these churches, yeah, they, some of them have had issues and whatever, but we come away just so encouraged,
right,
about the state of the church. There are plenty of issues out there, but I think they get more press,
right,
than, yes, of course,
is representative.
Sure.
And, you know, when I think about the women, you know, and look, I mean, let's be open and honest that the church hasn't always been, you know, kind, mm-hmm, to women. You know, it has been, it has had, you know, sometimes in some churches, women under a thumb of, mm-hmm, of men. But gosh, I tell you, if you navigate any of the corners of the internet and some of the support groups.
Oh, dear.
It does not seem like a kind of place where you're going to go and get healthy,
right,
either, you,
right,
know, as a woman. I'm reminded of a conference that Shanti and I did, gosh, it would be 10 years ago or so. And it was an all day Saturday conference, marriage conference in the fall. And it was in the Midwest. And I remember we tried to get them to shorten it, but it was 8 hours.
Wow.
And so it was going to like four or five. And this is, okay, college football, like prime college football Saturday.
And you're expecting these men to show up, and 400 couples showed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So 400 men who would presumably rather be watching. Now, I'm a college football person, too. So a lot of people would rather be watching college football. But.
So here we were at the end, and we'd been talking for probably over that time, 5 hours, you know, talking about men, women, what the happiest couples are doing, all of those things that we normally touch on.
Just usually shorter. Yeah. We try to talk them shorter into that. Yes.
Yes.
So anyways, at the end, we did a Q&A time, and it was maybe 30, 45 minutes. And a woman stood up at the end, and she asked this question. She came up to the microphone and said, "So I've been very carefully taking notes and noting timing and everything of how you've kind of split all of this up over the course of this day.
Wow.
I just want to know, why is it that you gave the women all the hard things to do and you gave a pass to all the men?
Wow.
And gave them the easy things. And you heard the collective sigh of 200 men.
400 men.
Yeah.
400 men. 400 men hanging their heads. And it was like, I have just given up my entire Saturday.
Because I love my wife.
Right, right.
And I want to learn. And I want her to know how much I love her. And I do want to learn this stuff.
Oh, sure.
Also.
Oh, yeah. He knows he needs to know it, too.
And yeah, exactly. And Shanti, you know, had this terrific response. Do you want to share it?
Yeah. I mean, I basically just said, look, I hear what you're saying. I get the feeling that you have, because it's the feeling that I had when I started all this research. But the reason it feels easy to you,
what
we are telling the men to do, feels easy to you is because it comes naturally to you.
Right.
Those things
as a woman, like sitting and here's how you listen to your wife. Like you, for you, you think, of course that's easy. Where for the average guy, their brains are literally wired differently. It's a skill that they have to learn to do it in the way that
it's hard.
Clicks with the female brain. It's not hard.
It's hard.
It just takes purposeful.
It is impossible.
It's not.
There are three guys on here.
Okay, I'm outnumbered.
Now, I will tell you, my brain is wired more like a female brain when it comes to some of these things, which is part of why I've been able to translate some. But,
yeah, that's awesome.
But it's like really, yes, it is hard. And what you're asking, what's wild is what you asked the women to do probably sounded easy to the men.
Oh, of course.
Well, right. And here's the thing. It works both ways. And that's to circle back to the point about why women are leaving
the church.
The church there was a tie there, I promise. There is. Because I think right now, at the moment, there are probably some things that feel harder to the women.
Because we're only talking, if I'm a woman, I'm only talking to women in my support group. I'm not taking the approach which humility demands and curiosity demands that maybe I'm not seeing the full picture here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's and I'm seeing one side and I'm being reinforced in that because I have seen many, and statistically this is the case, there are many, many deconstructing groups that are primarily female. Yes. It is not as common to see the deconstructing groups that are primarily male.
Right.
It just isn't.
Yeah.
And so if you're in I hate to use the words, but kind of an echo chamber, yes, a little bit, sure. Like, it can be really easy that there is a neuroscientific principle that what you focus on is what you will see.
Right.
Period. Right. Like all the brain wiring, there's a bunch of, you can look at all the experiments on selective attention if you want to go look it up and go down a rabbit hole. But basically it is, if you are interested in figuring out what's true, you cannot only listen to people who agree with you. That's right. On this.
And we are absolutely not saying don't associate or get into support groups or anything like that. Because of course,
no one's going to think that.
I just have a rule of thumb, and this is just Jeff and no study behind it. But if I've been hanging out with some guys and that session leaves me at the end of it to feel less favorable toward my wife or toward other things of God,
right?
Then you know what? I find another group.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the Dr. Phil thing. How's that working for you?
Yeah.
And if it's not leading you to peace, but you feel that it kind of satisfies a burning resentment that you felt, I think there's something wrong.
Well, this was the whole root.
I'm sorry.
You're good. Well, I was going to say, this is the whole root of that principle. Oh, the principle in the book that my son and I wrote, that was you focus on you. You only have one magnifying lens. Who are you going to focus your attention on? Because of course our natural tendency is to go, well, the stuff that she's supposed to be doing is easy. The stuff he's supposed to be doing is, well, yeah, from your perspective, that was the whole purpose, is to create an opportunity to sacrifice and serve and to create that living picture. But so few people do it. It feels like so few people do it. And I feel like, you know, one of the things we ran into, I don't remember if on your podcast, we talked about the man bear thing that had run through TikTok of.
No, but I'm fascinated by
this.
It.
I've told the team, like, this is going to be my doctoral thesis if I ever go back and do it, is that whole that the, you know, that when on TikTok, when women are asked, if you're alone in the woods and you randomly, would you rather randomly run into a man or randomly run into a bear? And 6 out of 7 women said, I'd rather run into a bear. And by the way, all of the women in my life said bear, all of them, like the staff did, the therapist did, my wife did, my daughters did. They all said bear. And these aren't women. I mean, this isn't founded as somehow in ignorance. They know what a bear is. And they know, I mean, when I asked my wife, even like what percentage of men are predatory that you know? And she's like, I don't know, 1-3%, maybe. I only know one in my whole life that I would describe as predatory. And I said, so, and how many bears are predatory? And she was like, well, 100% of them, but they don't, being killed by a bear doesn't scare me like being taken or assaulted or hurt by a man. And so we unpacked this a little bit. And so we talked in the church with the men in the church at our last men's conference about, are we somehow failing to police one another in the church? That just that one creepy guy who greets women at the door in a creepy way, that we've all tolerated. Well, that's just, you know, Uncle So-and-so. Well, that's just, and is it a fair ask for us to go, okay, we, as men in the church, we need to step up and go, dude, you don't do this. We're not doing this. And to have that conversation, as scary and as hard as that sounds, to call that man to something better and something more insightful, whether he's doing it intentionally or not, we can't know. But, and that's begun to actually change some of the tone that men just know, like, hey, we're watching each other, and not just to be predatory or evil, but even just kind of like weird and creepy. Like, hey, that joke that flies with men, we're not going to do that in front of the ladies. Hey, the fact that you always swoop in for the hug, I've noticed a few women who don't seem to want to hug you, and somehow they end up hugging you. And so let's have you not do that moving forward. And just to kind of, because, you know, I feel like just that tone change, even that the men know we're going to have those conversations, has begun to make guys go, okay, I've got to be empathetic, which is for some of these men asking them to do something hard. Okay, look at this through her lens, not just your lens. And so does she want to hug you? And it's, you know, some of these men have never thought about it. They've never wondered. They've never had to. And I'm wondering if that's more the message that we've missed somehow.
Well, and I mean, a number of years ago when the Me Too movement was just exploding.
Yeah.
During those early days, I ended up interviewing a bunch of men and writing a couple of blogs about men's perspectives on Me Too. And one of the things that we heard from many of the guys is that they just hadn't quite recognized how big of a deal some of these things are.
Yep,
and it's not so much that your hugging her is a big deal, but maybe that's the 12th time this week and it's just like, can, you know, and that for her is a boundary and you just don't realize it. Right. And so, and this is all this is essentially an eye opening, having new eyes to see things in a different way. It's kind of the marriage thing.
That's right. Learning to love each other. Right.
Like, like, you know, on that long Saturday, we gave the men a bunch of things to do. We gave the women a bunch of things to do. And the women found that there were like, I had no idea that my husband has this secret insecurity,
this
secret self-doubt, and I'm hitting it. I'm hitting this raw nerve constantly. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And so it's that I had no idea thing.
Yes.
That what you're talking about on the men. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I, again, this so plays out with this conversation. And when people, every part of this comes down to, can we listen and can we learn from each other? And are we open to that? And I feel like that's, you know, Jesus says something really close to, people will know you're my disciple by your love for each other. Mm-hmm. And love doesn't mean the way I want to be loved or show love. Mm. It love means, no, I'm taking into account what you experience and what you're looking for and what's a blessing to you. And I think we've just kind of skimmed that sometimes, maybe a little bit too much. And I think that's, but it's been amazing with the people who we've interviewed, the people who've engaged with this question of church health has been a healthy enough to be asked hard questions, to be held account, to have boundaries. It's just wild to me that I don't know if we've had a single person that we've talked to yet. And I don't know that there's a single person I've read in all the articles and stuff I've read who has said, the thing that made me leave, you know, disconnect from the church and leave from the church was a totally off the wall, just random question. In fact, what started us partially on this path in like 2017, 2016, is when, in order to prepare for an Easter sermon, months and months and 6 months, 8 months out, I asked all the different free thinker atheist groups here in East Texas, like within an hour of me, that I would come and let them ask me questions, grill me. I would sit in the middle of the circle and they could sit around me and like all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
And I had zero who would let me come. Not just zero invite me. One tried to invite me and the group voted it down because they didn't want me there. And my comment was, I think free thinking doesn't mean what you think it means. if you can't ever bring in someone who would just answer your question. I'm not even there to proselytize you. I'm just there to answer so you'll know my perspective and why I believe what I believe. And the response was so over the top negative, sometimes even borderline abusive, the response, and was like, wow, I don't think that's free thinking. I think that is, to use that term, I think that's echo chamber. And so how do we not get stuck in that same thing? How do we learn? And again, not to continue to fluff, but the For Men Only and For Women Only, those two books that gave insight to men about how women interpret certain things and to women about how men interpret certain things is really, and it being statistically based, other people had done stuff like that that had some value, but y'all's was the first one that actually ran the numbers and showed like, no, this is actually what guys are thinking and actually what women are thinking. Now, you know, as you're doing this work, I'm encouraged to see and looking forward to in September to seeing what does that mean for how churches need or can see this within their own denominations, so that people, when they deconstruct, if they trip over Jesus, that's fine. That's his job. He's the stumbling stone. He's the scandalon. But they're not. I've not run into that. They're not tripping over Jesus. They're tripping over us. And sometimes it's like, well, like you said, of course, we're jacked up human beings. We're a dysfunctional family. That's the truth. Just check our genogram. It's bad. It's pretty bad. but as it started off well with Jesus, and then it kind of fell apart very quickly after that. But but that's I think this is a big deal for people to hear. You can model a healthy marriage to your children and their children and other people's children. You can model that, and that is inspiring to people. You can have
It shows that following Jesus makes a difference too.
Right.
Right. In one of the most important ways that it can make a difference.
Absolutely.
Which is for us to have a strong and healthy marriage that reflects the union of Christ and his church.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay. Any final stuff from you guys, any input you guys want to give for our audience that might help them out, or where they could go, what they could listen to, anything, carte blanche.
Well, and again, this is going to sound like a mutual admiration society, but when you were on our podcast, Chris,
that was so good.
When the camera went dark, I turned to Shanti and said, "That was my favorite." and I'm dead serious, because you brought to the podcast some thinking that we hadn't had before, and your descriptions of things, I mean, just great. And so the listeners of this particular podcast, your podcast, are blessed.
Yeah.
And we just want to say thank you for what you guys are doing, because, you know, as a friend, well, as a matter of fact, Chris, the friend who introduced us to you,
that miraculous meeting, that friend who was
at one of your conferences.
Well, yes, you should explain what happened briefly.
Yeah, it was a friend of mine from law school.
What friend of yours?
Oh, well,
she was
okay.
My roommate.
She was Shanti's roommate too. So. Yeah, okay, but she was my friend first. So, so anyways, she once told me this story a couple of years ago, that she and a friend were talking over coffee, and the friend was going through a very, very difficult time in her life. And my friend, Shanti's and my friend, said something like, well, what are you going to do? And she goes, well, what can I do? You know, I'm a believer. He's the only game in town. Oh, I can't go away.
Yes.
And it was this sense of, you know, that passage in the Gospel of John.
Yeah, John 6.
Where some of the disciples, exactly, yep, walked away because Jesus had shared some hard things. And he said to his disciples, will you also go away? Yep. And they said, Peter, yep, said, where can we go, Lord?
Where else?
Because you alone have the words of eternal life. And so when it comes to the deconstructing, okay, I get it. You know, there are things that we as humans and churches have not done perfectly,
yep,
or sometimes we've
have
failed.
Done badly.
Yeah,
sometimes.
That's actually one of our mottos: is deconstruct your faith in yourself, deconstruct your faith in other people, deconstruct your faith in any. Of course, you should. If you've got any faith in those, that needs to be deconstructed.
Yes,
but not in. That doesn't mean to deconstruct your faith in God, or at least build it, rebuild it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I, you know, in hearing us all talk today, that's what kept coming into my mind, that story from her and then from John 6. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Reconstructed Faith. If you enjoyed what you heard or were challenged, please leave us a review. It'll help other people find us. If you have questions or a topic you'd like to hear discussed, shoot me an email at info@southspring.org. Reconstructed Faith is a resource of South Spring Baptist Church. Remember, don't give up, trust God, search for answers.